Well, I want to start now by introducing our first speaker of the evening, and almost needs no introduction. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin has committed her life's work to public service. She served on the Madison City Council. She was elected to four terms on the Dane County Board of Supervisors. She was elected to the Wisconsin State Assembly, serving three terms. In 1998, she was elected to Congress in Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. And in 2012, she was elected as Wisconsin's first woman to serve in the U.S. Senate. By the way, Tammy sits at Fighting Bob La Follette's desk in Washington, D.C. Tammy Baldwin was also the first gay member elected to the U.S. Senate, and she is our speaker, first speaker tonight. I want to give a very warm welcome to my friend, Tammy Baldwin.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Norm. It is absolutely wonderful to be the opening act, the warm-up act for an incredible lineup of inspirational and progressive leaders. But like Norm did, I actually want to start with a few words about a leader who's not with us tonight, Ed Garvey. You know, Ed understood how important it was to pass on to the next generation our proud progressive traditions and values. Each year, Ed brought progressives together from across the country at Fighting Bob Fest to share this tradition and to give people a voice. Let's celebrate and honor Ed's life's work by continuing his commitment to advancing our progressive values, standing up to powerful interests, and engaging people in our democratic process. We may have lost a fighter, but the fight goes on. Welcome to the 16th annual Fighting Bob Fest. Now, Fighting Bob La Follette was a hero of mine, a political hero of mine, an inspirational, progressive hero of mine. And as Norm just told you, not only do I sit in the Bob La Follette seat in the Senate, but I literally sit in a desk that he once used. I learned as a freshman I could ask for a specific desk, and I was able to get a desk that Fighting Bob La Follette once sat in 100 years ago. And like school children, senators have been known to carve their names or sign them in ink, and you just need to open the drawer and look. And when I need a little inspiration during one of those debates, I do that. And I find him a hero because of what he stood for, because of the progressive movement that he started. But he believed that powerful special interests, the monopolies of the day, the lumber barons, the freight rail lines, the electric utilities, that they had way too much power in Madison and in Washington, and he believed that the voice of the people needed to be elevated. And he would ride circuit around the state of Wisconsin. He'd appear at county fairgrounds. He'd stand on hay wagons and give incredible, inspirational speeches, sometimes hours and hours at a time. They didn't have TV back then, you know. That was entertainment, you know. And in fact, I heard this great story. I found out that the desk that I sit in on the Senate floor also bears the signature of two other U.S. senators that hail from the state of Wisconsin. One is Senator Blaine, another progressive era senator who served alongside La Follette for a while. If you haven't heard of him, I'll tell you one thing about him you'll probably remember, and that is that he sponsored the amendment to repeal prohibition. Probably appropriate for a Wisconsin senator. But the other senator who sat in this same desk was Gaylord Nelson. And I remember learning that you know, Bob La Follette was there 100 years ago, Gaylord Nelson 50 years ago. I asked for the La Follette desk, and I wonder if Gaylord asked for that desk. So I asked his daughter, Tia, and she said, you know, I don't know specifically whether he asked for the La Follette desk, but she said he told me a story that she'd never forget, and now I won't either. Hopefully you won't. She said his father, Gaylord's father, when he was a young lad, said, son, get in the car, we're going for a ride. They went from Clear Lake to Amory, where they heard Fighting Bob La Follette give a rip-roaring speech. And on the drive home, Gaylord's father said, son, what did you think? And the first thing he said was, I think I want to be a U.S. senator someday. But the second thing he said is, but I'm afraid that guy's going to solve all the problems first. Well, I want to say, perhaps the obvious, that we live in some similar times right now to what started the progressive movement. There are folks who are very wealthy, very powerful, very well-connected, that call too many of the shots in Madison and too many of the shots in Washington, D.C. And at this moment, you may notice there's a bit of dysfunction, chaos, and noise in Washington, D.C. Whether it's the shout fests on cable news or the tweet storms from our president, there's a lot of noise, a lot of chaos, and in that mess, the challenges and struggles of hardworking Wisconsinites just aren't being dealt with. Washington is not fighting for Wisconsin. Washington's just fighting. And it is only, it seems, the wealthy, the powerful interests that seek advantage and make out during these sort of times. And I wanted to share a few examples of what's happening while the noise and chaos persists in Washington. I'm going to start with drug corporations. You may have noticed that they are jacking up prices left and right, and it's been going on for quite a while. And it seems that they're doing it just because they can. I remember last summer when the maker of the EpiPen jacked up the price of a pack to $600. If you have a loved one with a severe allergy, you have an EpiPen, and you know where it is at all times. And just as this was happening last year, parents were getting ready to enroll their kids in school. And the school nurse or the school principal was saying to mom or dad, we need to have an EpiPen here. And parents and school principals were coming to me and talking about parents in tears saying, we don't have an extra $600 lying around. Another story I heard on this same topic just a few months ago is a woman I met in western Wisconsin. She has MS, and for many, many years now, she's been taking a drug that helps slow the progression of the disease. She said that she and her husband had a heartbreaking discussion a short while ago. They decided that she would stop taking the medication when it reached the price of $90,000 a year. They do it because they can. The second group that I wanted to talk about are what I call activist hedge funds, sometimes vulture hedge funds. Now, don't get me wrong, good investors and small businesses, large businesses need investment. But I don't know how many of you have heard of the Wisconsin village of Brokaw. Brokaw is a village about 10 miles north of Wausau. And for over 100 years, Brokaw had a paper mill owned by Wausau Paper Company. For 100 years, that mill provided good-paying jobs to the community. But a few years back, some activist investors, vulture hedge funds, bought up more and more stock in Wausau Paper Company and decided to start throwing their weight around. The typical things they do in these activist campaigns, they call for members of the board who are loyal to them. They call for the dismissal of managers. They do a lot of things that are focused squarely on short-term profits, drive up the price of stock, and then sell. There's no view of the workers. There's no view of the community. There's no view of the long-term health of an enterprise. And that's what happened in this case. A short while after they had gained enough stock, they called for the sale of all three of the paper companies in Wisconsin, that paper mills that Wausau Paper ran. They ended up selling two, but they closed Brokaw. Hundreds of pink slips. This was the beating heart of Brokaw. And today, the town itself is insolvent. But the former management said it was profitable when closed, and they had just invested in its improvement. These folks are getting away with it because Washington isn't standing up and insisting that when these decisions are made, that workers' rights and community interests are also a part of the conversation. The last of the examples that I want to share is the power and sway of the big lobby shops in Washington, the power of that revolving door between politics and lobbying, and the power of the foreign steel interests. And that's about Buy America. Now, I've been fighting for Buy America policies for years. And last year, I had what I felt was an important victory in the water infrastructure bill passed by the Senate. It had some really important new provisions to help cities across the country like Flint, who had lead in their water. And what I said is, if we're going to spend taxpayer dollars to do that, and we must, let's start with using U.S. steel, U.S. iron, and U.S. workers. And my reform became a part of the bill, and I was really excited, and it went over to the House of Representatives, and then in December, the lame duck session, after the election, before the new president's sworn in, all of a sudden I read in the Wall Street Journal that Paul Ryan and the Republicans in the House have removed the Buy America language. Yeah. Why? The Wall Street Journal says it was at the behest of Russian and Brazilian steel interests, and the lobby firm had just hired former Speaker John Boehner. Who are they representing? So we've got to change so that Washington starts working for Wisconsin instead. And it's why I'm standing up and fighting back and taking on all of those powerful interests. It's why I've introduced the Fair Drug Pricing Act with a bipartisan colleague, John McCain, to make the drug companies justify what they're doing, hold them accountable. And it's why I will keep fighting for Medicare to be able to negotiate lower drug prices on behalf of all Americans. It's why I've introduced the bipartisan BROCA Act to create an early warning system against these vulture hedge funds, and why we've got to get rid of, and why I'm leading the charge on getting rid of the carried interest loophole that gives hedge funds managers a lower tax rate than teachers and truck drivers. And it's why I will not give up my fight for Buy America, and I will never give up that fight to stop the revolving door by which politicians become lobbyists, people from private sector go into government oversight of that same sector, perhaps hoping for a better paid job when they go back out. These are the fights, and many more, that matter to me because they matter to the people of Wisconsin. And there's no issue that I take more personally than health care. I have my own story. I was a child with a severe illness. At 9 years old, I was in the hospital 3 months, and I was then labeled with those terrible words, pre-existing condition. My family couldn't find any health care at any price from any insurer until I became an adult. I grew up believing that no mom or dad, no grandparent, no foster family should ever have to lay awake at night worrying about whether they could get the health care that a child needs. And it is my fight and our fight. And I want to stress that second piece, our fight. Against all odds, we brought to a halt an effort to take away health care from millions and millions of Americans. And I'd love to tell you that as a proud progressive fighting as hard as I did in the Senate, that I did it myself. I'm in the minority party. We're in the minority in the House. We don't have the White House. You earned that milestone because you spoke out, you told your stories, you got engaged, you talked to the media, you held town halls, you held rallies, you were involved. And I never want you to forget the role you played in reaching this milestone. This past week, we got to work finally in a bipartisan manner on some short-term fixes to the Affordable Care Act and trying to reverse some of the sabotage that our president has conducted against our health care law. But we can and we must do more to make health care affordable and accessible to every American. We know we can do better. And that's why we're starting a new conversation. And it's why I'm supporting a public option. It's why I'm supporting buying into Medicare at age 55. It's why I'm supporting a new plan to allow people to buy into Medicaid. And it's why I've signed on to Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill. But again, this is where you come in. If you care about health care, if you care about dreamers, if you care about our climate, if you care about education, if you care about good-paying jobs, you've got to keep fighting. You've got to do it in honor of Fighting Bob. You've got to do it in honor of Ed Garvey. And you gotta do it like a good progressive badger and patriotic American. Thank you all.
U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. Well, again, we have so many great speakers tonight, and I want to give a very warm welcome to our next speaker. Mark Pocan has represented Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District in the U.S. House of Representatives since 2013. He's currently the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and he previously served in the Wisconsin State Assembly here for 14 years, including during some of our roughest times here in Wisconsin. And I have to also say that 20 years ago this fall, Mark and I traveled to El Salvador together and visited our sister city, Arquetao. So we have a long history of working on these projects. And let's give a very warm welcome to Mark Pocan.
Thank you. It is great to be here with so many progressives to celebrate our nation's most famous progressive, Fighting Bob La Follette. We are all here because we share the same values. We feel that everyone deserves a fair shot, that they need to have opportunity for their families. We really believe that all people are created equal, with certain inalienable rights. We support quality public education, both K-12 and higher education. We believe workers have a right to organize a union. We see health care as an essential right, and everyone deserves health care. We want diplomacy and respect for other nations rather than a perpetual war state. We understand and accept science and that climate change is a human problem that can destroy our planet if we do nothing. And we will fight for the American people, every single one of them, not just the special interests or the wealthy. You know, Fighting Bob said this, and I think this is so true still today, quote, "America is not made, but it is in the making. Mere passive citizenship is not enough. Men must be aggressive for what is right if government is to be saved from those who are aggressive for what is wrong." And today, more than ever, there are many people who are aggressive for what is wrong. This whole idea is personified by Donald Trump and his administration. I mean, just look at what we've seen in the short time he has been president. He said he would change how Washington did business and he'd drain the swamp. Well, instead, he's built a high-rise luxury condo on the swamp. He's put oil executives in charge of the State Department. He's put oil people at the Department of Energy and Interior, as well as the EPA. And there are so many Goldman Sachs employees in his administration, and this is true, that the CEO of Goldman Sachs said it was becoming an inconvenience. Google it. It's true. He's put the alt-right in the White House. Even though Steve Bannon and Seb Gorka are gone, Stephen Miller remains. And these people hold dangerous nationalist views. When it comes to budgeting, he wants to cut programs that lift Americans out of poverty and that grow and strengthen the middle class. And he couldn't even find it in his heart to fund programs like Meals on Wheels and assistance to poor people with heating bills. But he wanted to put $70 billion additional dollars into more war. He put the arch enemy of public education, Betsy DeVos. I knew that would get a big boo. A billionaire anti-public school advocate who's made a career out of dismantling public education in charge of public education. On healthcare, we know this story all too well. Donald Trump and the Republicans have tried to kick tens of millions of people off of their health care. He wants to raise deductibles and premiums, eliminate health care for the people who need it most, those with pre-existing conditions, and create uncertainty in the market, all so he can provide tax cuts for the wealthiest in this country, insurance companies, and big pharma. When it comes to climate change, he ended the Paris Agreement, and he is scrapping protections for clean air and clean water and supporting fossil fuels that will have serious consequences for future generations. He wants to cut taxes for the elite and his golf buddies rather than the people who work at his golf resorts in Mar-a-Lago. He has a singular obsession on tax cuts for the wealthiest at all costs. When it comes to international relations, he's worsened our hand internationally and dropped the mother of all bombs in Afghanistan, added troops to a war he said he didn't support, and talked tough to a North Korean regime that is as unstable as Trump is narcissistic. And of course, how can we forget the wall? Who's going to pay for the wall? No, it ain't Mexico. It's going to be us. Trump and his administration is even willing to shut down government in order to try to get a wall, because it shows a little more about the ugliness of this administration. This just brings me to the fact that this administration is unfixable, given what happened in August. Just when we thought it couldn't get any worse, in August we hit rock bottom with Charlottesville. Now, even though I think many of us think that Donald Trump works against the values that we believe in, I never thought there would be a day that I would have to condemn our president for supporting neo-Nazis and white supremacists in our own country. President Trump had the opportunity to unite us, to bring our country together in those days following the terror attack. Instead, he hit rock bottom when he claimed there were very fine people on both sides. And now he wants to deport 800,000 people who live honorably in this country in every way simply because of their national origin and more likely because of the color of their skin. Mr. President, there are no fine people who gather with white supremacists. There are not good people who are part of the Klan. And there is no place in America for neo-Nazis, especially the White House. President Trump, you have failed this country and showed us your true heart. And that is not one that is much of an American, much less an American president. You failed our nation. And Congress is just as complicit. Speaker Paul Ryan, I knew that was coming, so I would wait for a second, and the Republicans in Congress continue to turn a blind eye to the president while he's doing lasting, potentially irreversible damage to our nation. At one time, Paul Ryan stood up to the president during the campaign. Now all he can do is roll over and let the president rub his belly. Speaker Ryan and the Republicans are not just enablers. They're supporters. They're cheerleaders. And as long as Paul Ryan continues to let the Tea Party, that was born partially out of racism and hate, be the tail that wags the Republican dog, we have a complicit Congress with this president. Elections have consequences, and the consequences of 2016 were Donald Trump and the congressional majority. But as tough as all that seems, I am optimistic. We don't have to settle for this. We can do better, and we must do better. Though President Trump and the Republicans are set on making their disastrous vision a reality, we have a secret weapon, the American people. We showed the world that the day after the inauguration, millions of people, not Donald Trump millions of people showed up in the streets across the country here in Madison and said no to President Trump and his agenda. And I want to share with you, because this is so very important, we really are winning. the very first day of Congress, the Republicans were going to put a rule out to gut ethics laws for members of Congress. You all heard about it, and they had to take the rule back. There was a bill that was going to sell off millions of acres of public land. You all heard about it, called up your representatives, and they took the bill back. They wanted to take health care away from tens of millions of people, and the reason they can't get it done is because you all got upset, called your representatives, and we stopped that bill from becoming a reality. And I don't know if you saw the news this week, but in 6 districts, there have been special elections across the country, including places like New Hampshire and Oklahoma, where districts that Donald Trump won flipped to Democrat, and no Democratic districts have flipped to Republican. And even in those deep red congressional districts, special elections this year, by Election Day, they turned out to be vibrant shades of purple. This is a canary in the coal mine, and I think we're going to see a lot more to come. Now, the 2018 election is just a year away, and I have to add what Norm said. This is a 501c3 organization sponsoring this, so I can't explicitly talk about campaigns. However, I do want to say Tammy Baldwin is as good as a person you could possibly have in the United States Senate. Her values are our values. She's smart, compassionate, effective, and she's our senator right here from Wisconsin. I couldn't be more proud of the work that she's done. And all I can say is I just hope I have years more to work with her in the U.S. Senate. And everything that Tammy Baldwin is, our governor is not. From busting unions to destroying our public schools, from not investing in our roads and bridges and schools and broadband, to breaking his promise on moving our economy forward, to giving $3 billion to Foxconn, the biggest boondoggle in the entire country, he may be having a new career option next year. Now, I am not advocating for any candidate. I am just advocating that we have someone who takes this job who doesn't have malice towards its own citizens. And that's not Scott Walker. And let me just say, if you don't like the current people who are running Congress, if you want them to change their ways and they won't, you can change the faces of the people in Congress. And I noticed there are some people who might even be here today who are running for Congress, and I can tell you there is an air out there right now. People are tired of the same old response that Washington has been delivering. And they're looking for people who will actually listen to them, people who will do a town hall more than every 690 days. And some people also might be doing some job transitions. On a completely separate note, I am really glad to see that Iron Stash, Randy Bryce, is going to be speaking tonight, and I'm very excited to hear him. This is our moment as progressives. We have grassroots activists popping up across the country and across our state. We need to make sure that we're building a movement and not just a moment. Are you with me? Who here wants to see a $15 minimum wage? Who here wants to stop the perpetual war state that we've all too often been in? And who here wants health care for everyone and Medicare for all in this country? We can do this and more. We are winning. Let's keep fighting for those progressive values of fighting Bob La Follette, and let's take our country back and make America even greater. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mark Pocan.